I wish I could do this in my own life, and it'd sure be great. And but there's a lady named Marianne Williamson, and some of you may have heard of her, but she's really an amazing writer. I mean, she just has this way with writing words in a beautiful way that brings about, you know, you'll well up with emotions reading her writing. It's so beautiful. And Darlene was a big Marianne Williamson person. And Marianne Williamson also does a lot of tapes, meditation tapes like these ones we've been doing, if you're interested. And she has this voice that is like angelic. When she's speaking on one of these tapes, she does all types of things. You can get a tape on relationship or on breaking up in a relationship or getting into a relationship or, you know, fear and love. I mean, she's got all these tapes. And Darlene had boxes of tapes. They were always just flying out of her house. And she just loved Marianne Williamson. And there's a book called Illuminata, which is just a book of prayers that Marianne Williamson wrote. And it kind of got me writing my own prayers. And so sometimes I will have people write their own third step prayer because it says, you know, we said something like this. And I think that's actually step 7, but it says we said something like this. And, you know, those prayers are there, but it's the, you know, you can write your own third step prayer, your own 7th step prayer, your own prayer when you retreat. And we're going to have a return prayer here. And I got that from Marianne Williamson, and that was something that Darlene turned me on to this woman. And she just loved Marianne. And when Darlene was dying in the hospital and all those people were there, I just thought, well, what the heck? I'll give it a try. Because Darlene listened to those Marianne Williamson tapes. She had them in her hospital room, and it was that you know, that crystal clear voice. And I just thought, well, what the heck? So I got on the internet and I found out that she belongs to this church that's back in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and that's where she lived. And I kind of got, you know, in and did all the stuff I could to get the furthest into a contact deal for her. And I found a contact phone number for this place, and I left a message. You know, this message is for Marianne Williamson, and I explained the whole situation to this woman. And I also found out that Marianne Williamson was, and I'm sure probably still is, she was very big in the fundraising effort for HIV and AIDS research and raised a lot of money. And so I knew this was kind of a deal, so I called and I just left this message and saying that, you know, what the situation was. This woman helped all these addicts in Seattle, and now she's dying, and would you consider giving her a call and talking to her? And it wasn't like maybe the next day I got a phone call. Yeah, hi, this is Marianne Williamson. And I got your message, and thank you very much for calling. And what's the situation? And I explained that Darlene, you know, was probably going to die within a few days. But she was cognizant. She could talk. And she said, okay, well, here's what we'll do. At this time, you go to the hospital, and I'll call your cell phone. So I went to the hospital and told a few people, oh, you're not going to believe this. You know, wait till you see Darlene's face. And the phone call came, and I answered the phone, and hello. And oh, she was like, yes, this is Marianne Williamson. And I, oh, hi, Marianne, this is Kenny Down, and thank you, and yeah, this is about blah, 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 blah. She said, Kenny, let me talk to Darlene. And I went in the room, and I said, hey, Darlene, there's somebody on the phone for you. And it was that angelic voice, you know, and she just knew immediately. She started bawling. It was just such a great deal. And I'd said it that earlier that I would tell you a little bit about this written prayer deal and where it came from. And that's kind of the bigger story of that deal. And it was just the most beautiful thing to watch her get that call and to hear Marianne Williamson talk to her about death and dying. And, you know, this was a woman that knows a lot about how to help somebody make this kind of a transition. And it was just a great deal. And Marianne Williamson stayed on the phone for as long as Darlene wanted to talk. And finally Darlene was tired. And I think she died probably just a few days after that. So, with that, I think we will we'll stop recording and we will take a break. We'll come back in. We'll do a prayer and we'll do a little more on the 12 step and we'll be done for the weekend. So, thank you, everybody. Okay, everybody. Welcome back. My name's Kenny. I'm an alcoholic, and this is going to be our last session for the weekend. So there's just a few things that maybe I'll touch on. And again, thank you all for having me here this weekend. It's been really, really a great experience for me. And I can just tell you from sitting in this seat, and also we have a retreat in Seattle that I helped put together, and I did kind of the business end of that retreat for 10 years, and now I've passed it on to some other people. But, you know, one thing I hear from all the people that come through is these retreats have as much impact on the person doing the retreat as people coming, maybe more. You know, I mean, I have really just been completely and totally filled, and my batteries are charged, and I just feel so very grateful to be here and to be with you all. So, these retreats kind of serve sometimes, I think they serve as a wake-up call a little bit. And sometimes it might be a bit much, it might be maybe a lot of information, it seems kind of overwhelming, and it takes a long time to sometimes digest this stuff, and you probably can't digest all of it, you know, and you just kind of take a little bit that you remember from the retreats, and hopefully you can put some of this into your spiritual practice. But these do serve as a wake-up call. And it is pretty intense. And the real reason for that, I think, is that for me, you know, to have had a spiritual awakening kind of required that I was spiritually asleep first. And there is kind of analogy in that, you know, I had to be drunk before I could get sober. And I had to be spiritually asleep before I could have a spiritual awakening. And the further there's kind of a analogy that says the deeper the slumber, the louder the awakening needs to be. And I was a guy that really needed a good, you know, shaking and a good loud wake-up call. And I really believe that's what we have here. You know, this method that we're talking about, this hardcore kind of a big book message with the steps and stuff, it's a loud wake-up call. It's meant for people that are maybe further to sleep, or maybe we're just not, you know, as intelligent as the average bear. I don't know which way it goes. But a good friend of mine, Frank, used to call this special education AA. And Frank's been sick for quite a while now, and I don't see him around meetings hardly at all anymore. But I really loved him for that, because he would always say, "Oh yeah, Kenny, you're one of the special, you're going to need the special ed deal." And what that meant was that somebody was going to have to read the book to me word by word and explain the whole thing. I just wasn't going to get it on my own. And so hopefully this has done those things that we talked about in the beginning. It's encouraged the people here to think honestly, to search diligently within themselves. I'll talk about the 12th step just a little bit more, and then I'll talk about this prayer that I've written up here a little bit, and then we'll have time for a few more questions and comments. We don't have really much of a time restriction, but we do got a little bit of a time restriction here, so we'll stay to the time that we have and get as much in as we can. So there's an idea that you know, you just heard the story about Darlene, and I just love to tell that story because it tells you about spiritual potential. And what that means is that spiritual potential that was within Darlene when she came into that retreat, you know, all of those things that she did were really within her at that moment. You know, that spiritual potential was there, and it's there within every one of us, and it's there within within every person. You know, when I was back behind the McDonald's there, you know, that spiritual potential to be here in New Mexico with you for this weekend was already there. It wasn't something that was dropped in at some other time. You know, that spiritual potential was there. Probably it was a little hard to see, and I think that's part of the spiritual practice, is to try to see that spiritual potential in everybody that comes into the rooms, and to realize that we don't know who the next Darlene is that's going to come in, and we don't know who the next you know, great AA sponsor is going to be that comes in. You know, I was drunk and I was loaded when I came into my first AA meeting. I was completely inappropriate. I said some stuff that was, you know, very inappropriate. I was you know, emotionally, a basket case, all of those kinds of things. But that spiritual potential was there, and I try to really remember that. You know, when we're reaching our hand out to the still suffering alcoholic, it's really not about getting them sober. It's always going to be about the AA number three. And I've had a chance to work and sponsor with a lot of people, and in the light of what we started out the last session with, this idea that I would tell you there's been, you know, the 12-step work, I guess I would say it this way, 12-step work is not in my experience for the faint of heart. And what that means is that the big book does describe to us in the family afterward about the sensitivity being a handicap. You know, that sometimes we're oversensitive. And you know, this is, you know, if you put yourself on the firing lines in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, you will see all of those things that Dr. Silkworth talked about, the despairing lives and the blameless children, sad lives of these parents and spouses that are affected by alcoholism. A lot of the people that you sponsor are going to die of alcoholism. I think this is a disease. Still, even with all of what we've done in AA and all of the other 12-step programs, I think this is still a disease that statistically kills most of the people that have it. So, you know, I've had to endure a lot of tragedies because it seems like that a lot of the people that are attracted to my message are these last gaspers and these people that have been in and out and in and out for a long time. At one time, and I don't even know why I did, maybe it was a little morbid, but I kind of started a little RIP list, you know, these people that I'd worked with that had died, and I quit keeping count. I mean, I really cannot keep count. But I had a guy that I was working with that jumped out the window and committed suicide in front of his children. Bill Wilson had somebody hang himself in his house, you know, the founder of our program. This stuff happens all the time. I mean, it, in any home group, you know, these tragedies, if you go back over any considerable period of time, you're going to find that these tragedies are commonplace among us. And it doesn't always work out as a story with like Darlene's. You know, those are the heartwarming things and the things that really keep us going, knowing that that spiritual potential is there, but it's equally as heartbreaking when it doesn't. And I do need to be spiritually awake when I'm sponsoring people. And I have made mistakes. I talked about a little bit about this guy that I'd sponsored that I'd made a mistake with. Somebody asked about making the graveside amends, and I commented, well, yeah, there was a few, and I told you I would come back to him in step 12, and I will. His name was Gary, and he was a guy that I sponsored. He was just a great guy, and he was a car salesman with the huge, you know, the big diamond pinky ring, and he was from the East Coast, and he had the accent and all of the moves and everything. And everybody just loved Gary because he was one of those guys that was so full of BS that you just loved him. I mean, he just had these, you know, everything. You knew that he wasn't quite sincere. You knew he was a great guy, but you didn't want to like set your wallet down or anything. He was one of those guys, and you know, Gary wouldn't mind me saying this because we always teased him. He was just one of these really, and he was in and out of the program, and he was extremely funny. He had a great sense of humor. He was a good looking guy, and everybody around the hall and stuff loved him. But he struggled so mightily with sobriety, and he just could not get sober. And he finally asked me if I'd sponsor him, and I told him I would take him through the book, and I started reading the book to him, and he came over, and I travel sometimes for my business, and I was going up to Alaska. I was only going to be gone a few days, but I was going up to Alaska, but I was going to miss my next appointment with him. So I told him, well, Gary, I'll miss my next appointment, but I'll call you as soon as I get back. And he was telling me, Kenny, man, I'm freaking out here. You know, I need something more than this. I gave him a set-aside prayer and a circle and triangle, tell him to read, do all this stuff and build a story. And he was just like, still, it wasn't enough. He was like, I don't know, man. It seems pretty shaky, and I am going out of my mind here. I need something. I hadn't been loaning tapes out because I loan tapes and books to alcoholics, and they don't ever bring them back. Even the ones that have been sober for years and years and years, it's just an unwritten rule. If somebody loans you a tape or a CD or a book or something in AA, you don't bring it back. And so... You know, this was kind of the mindset I was in. But I had a set of Joe and Charlie tapes on my table. And Gary asked me, he said, hey, could I take those Joe and Charlie tapes and I'll listen to some of those while you're gone in Alaska? And I said, well, listen, Gary, I don't like to loan my stuff out because it'll disappear and I won't get it back. But I'll tell you, when I come back, I'll burn all those for you. I'll record all those tapes and I'll give them to you when you come back. And I left for Alaska and I came back from Alaska. And I was thinking about Gary when I was gone. I called him up when I get back, and I left a message. And Gary had already died when I left the message, and I didn't know it. And he died when I left. He tore his apartment up, broke all the furniture in his apartment. The police were called. The police broke his door down, and he came out of his bathroom, projectile vomiting, and hit the floor dead, and died of a massive heart attack. He was sitting shooting coke or, you know, doing something. And I tell that story just so, you know, you got to be a little, you know, this is one of the things that kind of woke me up to this. I need to be a little more unselfish and a little more, and it's the reason I made the amends to Gary. Because I'll tell you what, when I went home after I found out that Gary had died and I saw those tapes on my table, they would have liked to have choked me. I didn't want to touch those tapes. I didn't want to look at those tapes. And you know, the thing about it was, I'd already listened to those tapes. I didn't really even need those tapes. So, you know, I mean, I don't hold back much when people are around and, you know, hey, that's pretty nice. Oh, yeah, here you go. You know, here's a couple more tapes. Here's a book that you'll like. Take this stuff. And I just realized that, you know, when I loan something, it'd be nice if you'd bring it back and then I can give it to somebody else. But maybe you'll find somebody and you'll give it to them and pass it on. And you know, I did make those amends at his service. I went to his service and I had written the amends letter, and I just wrote that amends that, man, that was very selfish of me, and I would have loved to have gave you those tapes, and I hope that wouldn't have made the difference between your living and dying. And I got a clear message back from Gary that he was in a good place, and I ended up sponsoring his girlfriend. That was his girlfriend when I sponsored her. She was actually the girl that I told, I want you to have a woman in the fifth step with you. And Darlene came and sat in that fist up. That was Gary's girlfriend. After he died, she asked me to sponsor her. So I feel like I've made amends with Gary, but still, it was just, it's one of those things I like to talk about in the 12th step. And I could go on and on. I really could with the number of people that, I've got calls that, hey, we just found Felix and he's dead out in his van. I've had a lot of those kind of experiences in AA. And I've had a lot of people stay sober too. I mean, an awful lot of folks have got sobriety. When I'm working with somebody in the 12 step, what we do is we, and I tell people up front from the very beginning, this is how it's going to work. But once we're through the page 164, you know, I want them out there looking for that face of hopelessness and finding somebody to sponsor. And I say, so now if we have a Tuesday 7 o'clock appointment, when we're done reading, we read 164. The next Tuesday at 7 o'clock, we don't meet anymore. You know, I want you to take that time and give that time now to somebody else. And we stay in touch by seeing each other at meetings and by phone or by email. If they have problems, they call. If they've got inventory to write, they'll write inventory and make an appointment, come over and read it to me. So I stay in touch with a large group of these people, but I don't meet with them every week. And I had one particular guy that I sponsor, and I took him up to page 164. I said, okay, well, now he was a little bit younger guy, and my wife was cooking too. That was one of the things that made it a little difficult, was that he was coming over for dinner every night. My wife said, well, why don't you just have Brendan come over for dinner on Tuesday nights? And Brendan doesn't mind me telling the story. He actually likes it, and we talk about it all the time. He knows that I share this story quite a bit. But he would, you know, my wife would cook for him, so it was like a night for him. You know, he'd come over, he'd get the home cooked meal, he'd get to sit with my family, and be in my house, and then we'd go in the room and we'd do our work for an hour and a half, and we got him all the way through the steps, and I explained to him, okay, well, now you got to go kind of give this message away, and we won't be meeting once a week anymore. Oh, I'm going to miss those dinners. I'm going to miss coming over here. Oh, yeah. And a couple days would go by, and I'd get a call. He'd say, hey, I got a real big problem. He says, I need to come see you. So can I come over this? Okay, well, come on over. And the next Tuesday, he'd be there again. He'd call my wife while I was at work. Oh, I'm going to come over on Tuesday and just want to let you know. Okay, well, why don't you come for dinner? Yeah. And he'd come over. And then the next Tuesday, it'd be the same thing. And the next Tuesday, I got a problem. Can I come see you? And I got a little kind of frustrated. I was thinking, hey, this guy's got to get out there and be working. And he actually was already working with others, but I wanted him to take that time and give it to somebody else. And it was around June. I got this card in the mail, and I opened this card up, and it was a Father's Day card from Brendan. And it just said, if I think of you as a father, and you've helped me out in my life, and I love you, I love your family and stuff. And he'd written a sing, and it just kind of like pierced my heart. It was one of those things that Don talked about, the Zorro, that the blade is so sharp you can stick it in and pull it out without drawing any blood. It was just one of those great things. And I really realized that, that these people that we sponsor, they love us. They end up loving us. And we do become family to some of them. And they do. Brendan ended up moving in ended up moving closer to the house and moved in like a mile and a half away. Today he has a key to my house. He comes anytime he wants. He calls me. I don't even know. He just calls and invites himself to dinner. I'll come home from work, and Brendan will be there, and we'll have dinner. And he doesn't really even have anything on his mind. He's just kind of hanging out. Doesn't have a particular reason. He just kind of. I was like, well, did you need to talk or anything? Oh no, I'm heading out. See you later. He just wanted to come for the food and kind of be with the family, talk and. It's just great, and we got a number of those kind of guys, these people, and women too. My wife sponsors, and I was talking to Tom and Juanita about this. She had a period where she was sponsoring a lot of people, but none of them, they'd get up to amends or they'd balk in inventory. She wasn't really getting these people to this place where they were actually all working with others, and then just something just kind of changed. The universe just kind of changed a little bit, and all of a sudden she just got like six of these women right in a row, and she couldn't believe it. She was just telling me, what they're doing, everything I'm telling them. She would say, yeah, go make your amends. And they'd be calling, okay, I did that. What's next? And she was, excuse me, what? And so now, we've got these women, and they're all sponsoring other people. And we just got this really, really great thing going. And it's just, the book describes this as a way of life that is not to be missed. I think it's 11 o'clock. We will have some time for some more comments or questions, I think, if we want to end with that. But, I really feel like I've given what I came to give this weekend. There's probably many more things I could say, but I just kind of feeling pretty complete for a retreat this weekend. And I'm going to offer you this last little thing, and that's that one more little deal, and then we'll open it up for questions or comments for the weekend. But it kind of brings everything full circle that one of my, and I noticed there was a couple of Yankees fans here, and that's okay with me. I guess you can stay. So I think there was like three of them. I actually kept count. I know you had a Yankees hat on. Somebody else had a Yankees hat. There we go. Yeah. But anyways, I'm a big Seattle Mariners fan, and the Yankees just have had this habit of destroying the Mariners. But I'm a Seattle Mariners guy, and it's something I got into in sobriety. I never was into sports at all when I was drinking, and I got into it in sobriety. A sober guy took me to a game. I really liked it, and I started going to more games with them. And then pretty soon I'm kind of coming out the other end. I got real obsessive for a while and was going to way too many games, but I just something I really love. I love going. I love taking somebody I love with me. And baseball is a very slow game. It's kind of meditative for me. There's lots of time between every pitch. And I sit and talk. Tom and I could go to a game. We'd have a great time because you can talk and tell stories and do things. And then, if you happen to catch some, the crowd will kind of let you know when you need to look. But it's one of my favorite things. My favorite person in the whole world to be with is my wife, Shannon. And I was with Shannon. I'm at the ballpark doing my favorite thing. It was a sunny day, so the roof was off. It's a day game. We're watching my team, and we're just it's just a great, great day happening. And I am irritable and restless and discontent for some reason. And I've looked back on this, and I really don't remember, but I think the Mariners must have been losing. But I was just not in that great of a mood. Here I am in this, you know, I have this beautiful life. I'm with the person that I love and that I want to be with the most. And I'm doing my very favorite thing. And I'm just pissed off at the world. And I'm not being very nice to my wife. And I'm, you know, I'm not talking. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know. We should leave. But the game got over. We were driving home. And my wife said, hey, let's go down to the beach. Let's just take a drive down to the water. We got on Puget Sound, there's lots of beautiful beaches and stuff. And I said, she said, let's take a walk down to the beach and just take a walk in the sand. And you know, the sun, you know, it was a day game, started at 1 o'clock. So it was starting to get, we'd go down there, let's watch the sunset and just kind of walk in the beach. And I said, well, I don't know. Let's go to the hall. And she said, no, going to the hall isn't what I have in mind right now. You know, let's go to the, you know, I didn't have in mind going to the AA hall. Let's go down to the beach. So she won, and we got off the freeway. I'm still feeling a little irritated that now I got to do something that I don't want to do. I've been doing what I want to do all day long. Now I got to do something I don't want to do. So we're going to go down to the beach and be romantic and walk in the sand. And I get off the freeway, and we're going down. We were going by this place, and I just had this thought. And my wife had never been back to the McDonald's and seen my little spot. And I pulled off the freeway. Actually, my wife was driving, which is common. You know, I sniffed glue in the sixth grade, so sometimes my driving skills are not just point right on. So my wife actually does a lot of driving. She was driving that day, and I told her, oh, turn off here, turn off there. And she said, where are we going? I said, well, I'll show you. Turn off here. We pulled in behind the McDonald's in this parking lot, and she said, oh, my God, this is the spot, isn't it? And I said, yeah, this is it. You know, that was right back in there between those little buildings. That's where I used to hang out. And that was my spot. And, of course, I was just, you know, filled with emotion back there looking at that spot. And right at that moment, a guy walks out between the buildings. Homeless guy walked out. And our car was parked right there. And he looked into the car. And I made eye contact with this guy. And he kind of walked off. And I was just shocked, you know. It was like looking back into the eyes of my own soul. And, you know, Shannon, in the way that she does, said, hey, Kenny, you got to go talk to this guy. And I was like, no, I'm not going to go talk to this guy. I just wanted to show you the spot. And, no, you should just go see if you can catch him. Just go talk to him and tell him that you used to, you know, hang out back here. And, okay, so I got out of the car and I kind of walked up to this guy and I talked to him, and it was a rough conversation at first. It was really tough. He was a African-American guy, and I said, hey, I noticed you were buying that deal, and I'm all dressed in nice clothes and everything, coming from the baseball game, and you know, just as white as you can be. My nice little car with my wife, and he'd seen us, and I get out. Oh, I said, hi, how you doing? I saw you come from that little spot back there. And I said, you know, I used to do a lot of drugs. And so he was kind of immediately defensive. Oh, is that what you think, that we all are just a bunch of drug addicts? He just took this. And I was like, no, dude, it ain't about that at all. I used to sit back there and do speedballs for hours and hours and hours on end. Man, I couldn't get out of there. And I left there, and I've been in AA, and I've been sober this many years. And he kind of lightened up a little bit. And he sat down at a bus stop, and I found out he'd just come in on the train, and I was able to tell him, well, you can go down here and you can get a meal. I told him you can go down to Fisherman's Terminal, and they got free showers down there, and you can get showers, and talk to the guy for a while. And, you know, I don't know whatever happened to him. I don't know whatever happened to the guy. He wasn't really interested in getting clean and sober. I tried to tell him about, you know, he could come to a meeting and where I would be in the next couple of nights and that kind of thing. And he was like, no, that wasn't my problem. You know, I got screwed over on this job in Philadelphia and this and that. And you know, he had a lot of game left. And so I just, you know, I didn't really try to, you know, preach to him or anything. It just was a nice deal. And I actually sat and talked with this guy for like 45 minutes. And I noticed that, you know, my life had changed an awful lot. And I didn't say this part, but when I walked into the Fremont Hall that night, I didn't have my shoes on. I had shoes, but they were in a bag. And the reason I didn't have my shoes on is because I'd been shooting drugs in my feet, and my feet were swelled up and hurt. And I, you know, it was painful to put my shoes on. And here I had this brand new pair of Nikes on, and I had been to the Nike outlet deal that somebody told me about, and I had a couple brand new pair of Nikes that I hadn't even worn, like up on my shelf in my garage, just for the next time I needed a brand new pair of shoes. And, you know, life was pretty good. And I'm sitting here with this guy, and I notice that his shoes are just tattered and torn. And I asked him, I said, well, what size shoes do you wear, dude? And I said, I just got some brand new Nikes here, man, and I got more at home. And I took my shoes off and gave them to this guy. And he cried, and I gave him, you know, what money I had in my pocket, and, you know, told him about where he could find some help for different things, and left. And I got back to the car, and my wife was, well, how was it? What did he say? And what was it like? And where in the hell are your shoes? So we went and walked barefoot in the sand, and you know, but it just, the thing that gets me about that story is, God, how quickly we forget. You know, I mean, I can be 2 hours out of one of these retreats and pissed off at somebody in traffic, or upset with my kid, just totally lose sight, or I have to mow the lawn now, or I have, instead of I get to mow the lawn, or I get to help my neighbors, or I get to go to work, or those kind of things. So I'm going to leave you all with that. Do we want a question and answer time? Is there questions and comments that we'd want to get? I think we still have probably about 5 minutes. Oh, we got some time on the CD. We're just gonna end this session so it fits on the CD here. So I think that I am done talking. So I'm gonna leave it to the microphone for questions and answers now, if anybody has any. And we'll just see if there's anything that anybody would like to add, and we'll go from there. So,
hi, my name's Dave, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
I don't have any questions or answers. I just have a comment. First, thank you. Mm-hmm. You've made me see that I want what you have, and I am one of those hopeless ones, and you've given me hope this weekend. Thank you from the depths of my soul.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. Yeah. I think we put this retreat on for Dave. I've thought that from the beginning. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just happy that Dave's here. It's funny, Dave and I met the very first, I think Dave might have been one of the first people I met when I walked up here to the Glorieta Retreat Center. And I found out he had a couple months sober. So I was interested. And then we walked over, found out we're in the same building together. But then Dave said, oh, no, I must be in the wrong building. And he turned around and walked away. It turned out he was in the room right next door to me. And he came back. So we've been kind of roommates, and it's just been great. So you're very welcome. And I think my guess is that an AA group is going to take good care of you.
I'm Maïs, and I'm an alcoholic. Hello. And thank you for being here, and for everybody else too. I just moved back here about 6 months ago from Olympia, and I'm grateful that I got to meet you here, even though I never heard of you there. Mm-hmm. I wish I had come to your home group.
Oh, I assure you, I'm quite famous.
I believe it. I am not a sports fan, but my home group in Olympia, the Gull Harbor Friday night meeting, at least once every season, they do a group trip. They buy a block of tickets to see a Mariners game together. And so I did that just to be part of...
They use the money out of the basket to buy those tickets, do they? No, I'm kidding.
No. We would get a cheaper ticket, like $20 tickets or $10 tickets. Because I bought three for my daughter and her boyfriend and myself. We all went to, actually two of her friends, went to a Mariners game, which I had never done before. So, but as to be part of the group. And so that was fun to remember. And I wanted to thank you for the, especially for the guided meditation, because I don't know how many years ago I did a similar meditation with somebody else, and I don't remember when or where, but it had the lake and meeting the spiritual guide. And as soon as you said the word lake, the image of the guide came into my mind, and I had totally forgotten about her. And so it was like meeting an old friend again. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to thank you for bringing back that memory and getting to learn that again. And I just wrote down some key words for myself so I could remember how to do it again.
I'm Michelle. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Michelle.
I just have a little something to say, and that is that I think this weekend, what you've brought to my heart is something so dear, and that is I was able to remember where I came from, and it's been a long time that since I've really, really felt the hopelessness and remembered the devastation of where I came from. And for a long time, I've been like, well, how can I help somebody else, you know, and da-da-da-da. And you have lit that fire inside of me. And the candle now is so much brighter than it ever was. And I'm going to carry this message because I know without what was so freely given to me, I would never, ever be here today.
That's right.
And I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, I realized that I left something out. Can I? And I'll. I guess Linda had a comment too. But I'm gonna just pick this up while we still got time on the CD. I don't know how I forgot this, but this return prayer. And I won't spend more than just a couple minutes on this. But you can read this. And what this return prayer that I wrote on the board says is this: It says, God, as we come forth, as we return to our proper place in the world, our right thinking, our right attitude, our right knowledge, we give thanks for this weekend, this place of privacy, this place of safety. We give thanks for our deepened awareness of your love for us, our love for our fellows, and a renewed commitment to live the spiritual life. And it ends with the amen. And the idea of this is that we have retreated. We did that retreat prayer, and we retreated on Friday night. And now here Sunday afternoon, we are going to return to our right place. And what that means is that our right place in the spiritual life is not here at the Glorieta Retreat Center. You know, our right place, it says we keep our feet firmly planted on earth because of that's where our fellow travelers are. That's where these drunks are that we're going to help. They're not here. So we return to our right place, and oftentimes in the history, there's been many, many groups that have tried to create this type of an atmosphere, and then they try to keep it going as a way of life, and it rarely works. There usually some problems develop. We had a group in Seattle for many years called the Love Family, and they bought houses up on Queen Anne Hill, and they were very big, and they kind of came out of the 60s and 70s, but they bought up all this property in a really exclusive area of town, and had a bakery and a store, and they all lived together, and it was just, you know, the big Love Family. Everything was about peace and love and stuff, and it was a great deal, but eventually people kind of started getting a little pissed off because Brother Love, all this property was in his name, and he was the father of children through a whole bunch of different wives, and people started kind of turning on him in their jealousy, and eventually, you know, now there is no Love Family in Seattle. You know, and that's what would happen here. You guys would say, well, how come Kenny gets a room by himself over there? And, you know, this is, and things would start to develop. Probably for this group of alcoholics, the Love Family took about 20 years to be completely wiped out. But this would, we'd be lucky if we made it 3 or 4 more days before people. So we got to go to our right place. You know, our right place is, this was a retreat. And now we return to our right place, but we're going to bring with us all these things, this right attitude, our right thinking, thinking clearly about what our vision of God's will is for us in all these days' activities. And with this, as Michelle so eloquently said, you know, this renewed commitment to live the spiritual life. So I wanted to get that in as to why I wrote that up here. And you can all write your own return prayer too. You can, you know, retreat and return anytime you want just by writing the prayer, retreat for a few hours, and then return. So, thanks.
It's been a good weekend for me. I'm Linda. I came here at a place in my step work where I'm well into my ninth step now and getting ready to study 10 and 11 and 12 in the big book, my sponsor. And I'm getting this restless feeling of needing to give it away. But I've had a lot of self-doubt. I'm older than most everybody who's new, it seems. Feeling like, well, who would want to work with me? And my sponsor keeps telling me that's not true, but I still came with those feelings. And this has been really powerful for me because your stories have help me understand that I do have something to give away. And I can think about people like my brother who died of alcoholism just 2 years ago, and other people that I've known that still suffer. And I know how much they need someone. And maybe I'm not the one for them, but I'll be the one for someone. And when you talked about reaching out to people, I'll have more courage to do that after this weekend. I tend to sort of hang back and I won't do that as much. I can feel a real change in myself, and I want to thank you for that and everyone who's contributed to that for me this weekend. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, shall we circle up and close? Oh, yeah, there's announcements, you bet. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Devin? Uh-huh. Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm.